Dr. Ross McKinney is the Chief Scientific Officer with the Association of American Medical Colleges. He's a pediatric infectious disease expert as well. Thank you for joining us, Dr. McKinney. It's nice to have you along.
It's nice to be here.
Also joined by Judy Hayes. She's a parent with two children in the Orange County Public School System, one of whom has Down syndrome. She's also signed on to a lawsuit, a federal lawsuit against the state of Florida over the ban on mask mandates. The lawsuit alleges that the ban is a violation of the Americans with Disabilities Act. Judy, thank you as well for joining us. Appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
Well, let's start with some of the basics. There is a CDC study out there which was conducted in elementary schools in Georgia, and it casts some doubt on the value of school kids wearing masks. The study was highlighted by David Zweig in the New York Magazine in an article entitled "The Science of Masking Kids at School Remains Uncertain." That study found that schools where mask use was mandated among students did not have a statistically significant lower incidence of COVID compared to schools where mask use was optional among students. However, the study also pointed out that it didn't take into account compliance or actual mask use among kids at these schools. Dr. McKinney, I know we're, in terms of research into the impacts of COVID on pediatric cases, it's still kind of new, right? We're still at the early stages of figuring out what this disease does and how it behaves. But I wanted to get your perspective on that. What is the value of kids wearing masks, you know, whether it's mandated or whether it's optional? What good does it do in schools?
Well, my perspective comes from a study that was run by something called the ABC Collaborative, which was basically all the school systems in the state of North Carolina. So the NIH funded a project that looked at whether masks and spacing could be used in schools to prevent infection. And the answer was, yeah, that basically there were very, very few infections in the school setting once masks were used and were expected to be in place. So the combination of vaccinating the adults in the environment and masks on the kids is probably as good as we can get, and I think it's on sound scientific principles.
Variables like, you know, whether mask mandates are enforced or how masks are used, what kinds of masks to use, like how many of those factors are kind of critical in whether masks are effective or not with kids?
I think that the nature of the mask is somewhat less critical. Any mask reduces the amount of particulate that somebody will distribute. And so once you start decreasing, you know, first you decrease the amount that's emoted by the child by putting on a mask, and then you also reduce the probability that they're going to actually get enough particles to be infectious on their mouth and nose by putting on a mask. So you're catching it at both ends. So I feel, you know, like it's pretty sound basis. Mm-hmm. Add in, do you expect the kids to wear their mask? If you're going to have a mask mandate, yeah, you expect the kids to wear their mask. You expect the teachers to enforce it. And the one place where that's proved to be a challenge has been in the lunchroom. So how schools set up their lunchrooms operations. I know, for example, my grandchildren are at a school where they've divided it into the lunch group so that they're split up. Half of them eat outdoors, half of them eat in the gymnasium. They're spread out. Some schools, everybody is facing the same direction so that the kids and talking at lunch is not generally allowed. Mm-hmm. So that's where the biggest hole has been to this point. In the classroom, wearing a mask, you're not generating aerosols because the kids aren't talking that much. Mm-hmm. And so the combination of masks and the fact that in general, kids are not talking a lot in the classroom setting means that there's not going to be that much transmission there.
Are you familiar with that study, the CDC study that I mentioned earlier, which looked at school kids in Georgia?
I was not familiar with the Georgia study. I was familiar with the one in North Carolina because Danny Benjamin and Kenesha Zimmerman, who did it, are people who I know.
So as far as, you know, people saying there's a downside to masking, thinking about things like social development, other issues, especially for younger children who may be in a situation where they have to wear masks for the better part of the school day, what are those downsides? Like, what's your perspective on some of the problems with masks?
The downsides to wearing a mask are often just communication skills. It's just, it is harder to hear each other. It's harder to articulate if you are wearing a mask. But other than that, the kids adapt incredibly easily. much more easily than adults do because they're not as used to it. So I've watched, again, my grandchildren who are 8, 8, and 11 put on masks sort of routinely. It's now part of their clothing. They wouldn't, you know, go to school without a mask anywhere, mm-hmm. and they wouldn't go without sneakers. So it's it quickly becomes part of the background, and I think it's much more has much more effect on adults. I don't see any effect on the kids to being masked, any negative effect to the kids being masked, other than just the need to become habituated to it.
Judy Hayes, I wonder if I could bring you into this conversation. Orange County Public Schools, the school board, voting this week and joining the list of school boards to essentially buck the state order and impose a mask mandate. It's a temporary one, of course. There is a medical opt-out for students. Observing that and given your particular situation, how does that make you feel about having your kids back at school in the Orange County Public School system? In particular, your son, Will, I believe, right?
Right. Thank you. So Will is the one who's 10 and has Down syndrome, is supposed to be in fourth grade, still is not back yet. He's still at home. It does make me feel a little bit better. My older son, Jack, is 13. He's in eighth grade. And from day one, we've been getting calls about positive cases. He was exposed actually on his first day of school, the 10th. We were notified on the 13th that he had been exposed, got a quick test. He had no symptoms. He wears two masks. He's vaccinated. So he was able to go back to school. But I'm hoping that now that we are masking everyone on campus, that we'll cut down on just the sheer volume of cases that we've seen. We've been open for 2 weeks. I think today is day 12 of school, and we're well over 2,500 active cases in Orange County, which is tremendous. It's an unacceptably large number. So the mask mandate, it does make me feel a lot better about potentially sending Will back. It doesn't ameliorate all of the problems that we were looking at, but it is a good step in the right direction. And it makes me feel better about having Jack on campus, less concerned that he would potentially bring something back home. We resolved the lunch issue independently by just he has a half day and he comes home before lunch. So that's not even an issue for him. So we're trying to mitigate whatever we can.
Mm-hmm. What about the lawsuit? You know, given what's happened in Orange County, at least, and with a lot of school districts across the state of Florida that represent a lot of the school children in the public school system, essentially saying we are now going to put mask mandates in place despite what the governor has ordered, is that lawsuit continuing?
It is. So actually, I do have some figures for you. Orange County became the 9th, and then I think Indian River County followed us to become the 10th. School district in Florida to impose a mask mandate. And that means that now more than 50% of school children in the state of Florida are attending schools where there's a mask mandate in contravention of the governor's directive. So we're headed in the right direction. But that's only one piece of the relief that we were seeking in the federal lawsuit. There's a state lawsuit that's proceeding, and it's actually being heard today on Wednesday. And in our case, we are proceeding under, there are some other things that need to be resolved, including but not limited to accessing synchronous virtual learning for kids who are quarantined, for kids who have disabilities, who still aren't able to safely come to school. That's also kind of under the purview of the executive order of the governor and the ed commissioner. So we are still pursuing those. But it warms my heart. It makes me feel good that we're moving in the right direction, and some of the districts are kind of seeing that this is a real problem and they're doing what they can do to address it.
What do you make of, I guess, the rhetoric around masks? Because it seems hard to kind of see beyond the politics to the science of it, right, Judy? How does that affect you as a parent, thinking about the heated rhetoric around masks and whether or not to wear them?
I mean, to me, I think it's nonsense. I think it's a straw man. I think the people who are complaining about the mask mandates don't acknowledge that we're not talking about punishing kids who legitimately can't wear a mask in school. I think it needs to be reframed so that we're not talking about who gets exempted. Nobody should need an exemption. The schools know which kids in their communities are going to struggle with wearing masks. Little kids, maybe kids who have autism spectrum disorders or respiratory issues, and they're going to help those kids to wear their masks appropriately. And I think that injecting the kind of culture war theory that masks are oppressive or they're taking away my freedoms, I think that's a straw man. And I think we never should have given that particular opinion any oxygen because it's just like a seatbelt. Like, you might not like wearing a seatbelt, but you got to wear a seatbelt.
Dr. McKinney, does it make it difficult as a physician to talk to people pro or con about some of these issues when there is this kind of level of heat, maybe more heat than light over some of these issues, like whether or not to wear masks?
Yeah, it's been interesting because people don't always act in a rational way as we discuss vaccines and masks. I mean, it's what is the logic to not the freedom imposition of wearing a mask when you're protecting others and you're protecting yourself? That's just contributing to the community. And the fact that we have an awful lot of people who seem not to care about protecting themselves and others is actually disheartening. And then the same thing's true with vaccination. Why this opposition to vaccination when you protect yourself and you protect others? It's how we will get rid of this epidemic. It's almost like there's some people who must be invested in wanting to maintain the epidemic, that we've got this massive amount of money going into opposition to vaccinations, which is just good common sense. And I might add, I looked up that study in Georgia, and the schools, the districts that had masks had a 37% lower rate of infection than the schools that did not require masks. So masks were there. The reason I hadn't paid much attention to it is it looked like masks worked, which is the same thing that the North Carolina study showed.
Right. Although I'll point out that in the fine print, it was talking about more the impact of the staff and teachers wearing masks rather than the students. But yeah, that is a stat from that study. If you're just joining us, we're talking to Dr. Ross McKinney, Chief Scientific Officer with the Association of American Medical Colleges, and Judy Hayes. She's a parent with two kids in the Orange County Public School System, talking about the return to school across the nation and in Florida, and issue of masks and vaccines. Dr. McKinney, just on the issue of, you know, how people react and respond to directives and you know, how we're coping with this pandemic on the informational level, I think it has been a little tricky to kind of figure out what to do when the guidance from the CDC, for example, it hasn't always been clear, right? There's been some opacity to it. There's been some kind of change in direction. I think that's hard for people to wrap their heads around. So how do you kind of navigate through that and say, well, the CDC might have been saying 2 months ago, do this. They've changed their guidance now, but this is why you should still follow those guidelines.
Yeah, well, and it's what we've been watching happen is, you know, our evolution of understanding of this disease is happening. The CDC is being caught in that. Now, I don't think the CDC has always handled their communications the way they should. I think there are a lot of times they truly have been opaque. There are a lot of times they've been inconsistent. I think for example, their release of the mask mandate was premature. So they have made what I would perceive to be mistakes. On the other hand, we keep learning more. And then you get things like Delta. I mean, that's through a turn. If you look, for example, our advice about, you know, what is the risk of a vaccinated person? Well, if you looked at the earlier variants like Alpha, and if you were vaccinated, you just didn't shed much virus. So you weren't likely to ever spread it to anybody else. So that's how you could get, you know, out of wearing masks once you're vaccinated. With Delta, unfortunately, you do excrete virus. If you're vaccinated, you're less likely to get infected. You're much less likely to get sick. But you still, when you shed, will shed a fair bit of virus and be contagious. So the rules changed when the virus changed. And you know, in an evolving epidemic, that's going to happen.
Judy, as a parent, has it been difficult to try and assimilate what you're hearing from local leaders, from federal agencies about what to do next? Do you feel like that has added to a certain amount of trepidation about where we're headed with this virus and this pandemic?
Absolutely. You know, in Florida, we've had a really difficult time getting information from the Department of Health, who now is managing, say, contact tracing and quarantining through the schools. And it's woefully inadequate. I mean, the only thing we can count on consistently is the inconsistency of the information that we're getting, and it's not being provided to us in a timely manner. I have 1,000 anecdotal stories of people, families like ours, the parents will get a notification that their child's quarantined after the quarantine would have ended. And then, you know, we're seeing this everywhere. Or in our case, a kid came home from school on Friday, found out that he had been exposed on Tuesday. So I had already, you know, my kids are all over each other wrestling and playing and everything. So for 3 days, we didn't know that we were supposed to be quarantining them. So then all of a sudden we're in a panic again. It's kind of terrifying, and we can't rely on the state to provide that information in a timely fashion. They're providing some information, which is almost worse than having no information, because you look at our county dashboard, you know, they publish numbers every night of active cases when they were reported and active quarantines. And if you assume that that data is accurate and timely, then you might make certain decisions. Whereas if you had the actual data, and if I knew that there were 6 cases reported in my son's middle school on one day, I might not want to send him to school the next day. But then what do you do? You know, we don't have options for learning at home, and kids, especially the kids who are in upper level classes, don't want to miss those days. You know, we have friends whose kids are taking AP classes. They're going to have to take an exam at the end of the year and can't necessarily self-quarantine for 10 days and miss all of that material. Hmm. So it's a terrifying time to be a parent of a school-aged child in Florida.
Dr. McKinney, do you think that extrapolates to the rest of the country? Like, what are you hearing from other states where they're in the throes of having kids return to school en masse as well?
I think parents all over the country are anxious about this process. Now, there are some states that have made it harder. You can feel like you've got a little control if you know that the kids are going in and they're all masked, and the schools are setting up expectations that the teachers and staff will be vaccinated. Then you can start as a parent to feel a little bit more comfortable. And those states that are allowing or requiring teachers and staff to be vaccinated, and there are states that are doing that, particularly now that the vaccine is fully approved, and then kids wearing masks, they're more comfortable.
Just to clarify, Dr. McKinney, which states are requiring teachers to be vaccinated?
We are starting at school districts rather than states. Mm-hmm. So, for example, my local school districts are requiring teachers and staff to be vaccinated. I don't know that it's a state level. It's at a system level.
And which district is that?
I'm in Orange County, but Orange County, North Carolina.
Gotcha.
So it's and looking at the schools. I think that we're seeing more districts. I think we will continue to. So, well, that's an individual example. We're going to see more and more who are going to require it.
Just thinking about the overall well-being of kids in general, in Florida at least, last year from the school setting was a bit of an experiment with the hybrid model of learning, some kids at home learning remotely, others in the classroom. It seems from what we've heard from parents and teachers that that experiment didn't really work that well. It was difficult for everybody involved. In general, Dr. McKinney, do you think it's better to have kids back in the class with mitigation measures than trying to slug it out remotely?
Unequivocally. I mean, I think kids, it is so critical. You know, you think about what it's like to be a second grader. You know, it's learning how to be social. It's learning how to interact with your friends. It's learning what the rules are. It's, you know, you stand in line. You learn to stand in line. You learn to how to follow certain rules. You learn how to read more effectively. And all those social things that are so critical to kids don't happen through hybrid learning. You may learn specific skills like, you know, read this book, but you don't learn all that other stuff about interaction, so important, the socialization of childhood. So I think it's really important that we keep working to keep kids in schools using all the measures we can to make that safe.
Judy, what are your thoughts? Because you mentioned before that there isn't now that option. You know, if you feel like it's not safe to send your kid back, you don't have the fallback of saying they can log into, in this case, in Orange County, Florida, it's LaunchEd to do that class. So how do you feel about the weighing up of being in class in person with mitigation measures versus having the option of learning at home?
Well, I think if we had the option of going to school in person with mitigation measures, obviously that's ideal for everyone, you know, and there's no questioning that. The problem is in Florida, the governor is preventing us from implementing mitigation measures. You know, we're not allowed to insist that everyone wear a mask. And it's not as simple as, well, if you want to wear a mask, your kid can wear a mask. And that's, you know, a popular talking point, but it just completely glosses over how masks actually work. So we've been lobbying for the virtual piece just to remain accessible as a backup for kids who need to be home and quarantining, and maybe for kids who are immunocompromised and truly cannot come to school until, you know, we're at a 5% rolling positivity rate. Our county is now at a 19% rolling positivity rate, and it isn't safe to go into school where there aren't mitigation measures. So, you know, in almost every instance, that in-person learning is ideal for everyone. We just were hoping that we would have the leeway to implement the virtual synchronous piece as a backup, you know, for the kids who need it. Even if it's, you know, a kid who wakes up in the morning and feels sick and doesn't want to go to school and infect their friends, they would have that option to keep up with their schoolwork. But we want to get, you know, we want to get Will back into class more than anything else. He misses his friends and his teachers and his routine. And he really thrived on, you know, that in-person learning and socialization. And that's one of the best things about having a child who has special needs being included in a typical education environment, is that opportunity for them to learn socialization from their peers, but also for their peers to get socialized with them, you know, so the next generation of moms who find out that they're having a baby with Down syndrome will think, well, Will was in my class in third grade and Will's awesome and I'm going to have a baby like that. And that's really cool. Just to see that disability is natural and it's a part of the fabric of our lives. And if all the kids with disabilities aren't able to go to school, that's an entire generation of kids who are missing out on that opportunity to learn that from their peers.
When do you think you'll be back in class?
I don't know. We're hoping that it would be soon. I have no idea. You know, we're kind of operating on a day-by-day basis here, hoping that we can get him into something sooner than later, because we're already 2 weeks into the school year and, you know, life is kind of passing him by and we want him to get back to school, but we also want to keep him safe. That's kind of just a daily balance we have to weigh out.
Mm-hmm. I want to thank both of you for joining me. Judy Hayes, a parent with two kids in the Orange County Public School System. She's also part of a lawsuit against the state of Florida over the ban on mask mandates. Thanks so much, Judy. Appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
And Dr. Ross McKinney, he's the Chief Scientific Officer with the Association of American Medical Colleges. Dr. McKinney, thank you as well.
Thank you very much. It was nice talking.